Hey there, folks. Alex Lux here, and welcome back to Classic Camera Revival. Got a little bit of a solo show today and a return to the idea of traveling light. I first recorded this episode from France in 2015, but a lot has changed since then. So let's dust off those passports, get the camera bags out, your suitcase is packed, we're hitting the road, and we're traveling light.
Welcome to the Classic Camera Revival, coming to you from the Greater Toronto Hamilton region of Ontario, Canada. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you most likely will by the end of the episode.
So here's the thing, we're all gearheads, and I get it. There is always this desire to bring as much as we can when we are traveling, just in case we get in a situation where, oh, I think this camera would be great for this situation, or that camera would be good for the other situation, and so on and so forth. And I'll admit, I am guilty of that. I remember the very first FPP meetup I went to in Findlay, Ohio. I brought everything plus the kitchen sink, a large format camera, a medium format camera, awful number of 35 millimeter cameras. And I also ended up walking away from that meet with two more cameras. I can't honestly remember what the total number of cameras I brought was, but let me tell you, looking back at that, it was way too much. I was also guilty of doing this at PhotoStock. Now, the difference is that those were photography-related events and photography-related trips. So bringing that many cameras along was perfectly fine. And it was also helped by the fact that I was staying in one place, in one hotel, and I could easily leave the bulk of my gear there and sort of swap things out as I needed them. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But ultimately, it needs to be Ultimately, there has to be a point where, do I really need to bring all this stuff along? And honestly, the answer for me these days is no, because a lot of things have changed. I'm not just traveling solo anymore. I'm doing longer trips. I'm being a little more intentional with my work, and that means thinking harder about what cameras to bring. And yeah, I would love to be able to bring a camera and a film and a lens for every situation, because each camera does things differently. One's not necessarily better than the other, but everything is just different. So I've gotten to the point where I want to seriously take a look at, where am I going? What sort of photography am I going to be doing? Am I traveling with family? Am I traveling solo? What sort of weather conditions are going to be there? And picking the cameras, or sometimes even just a single camera, to suit what sort of final product I want. A lot of the times, if you're flying, you're going to be restricted in space, right? Your camera bag will often count as your carry-on luggage, and we'll get a little bit into that later. So you are limited in size. You can't bring a massive camera backpack along anymore and take five different cameras with. So there's this idea of, hey, you know what? Maybe I bring one camera body and multiple lenses. And that's a really great idea. And the idea that you're not necessarily investing a ton of different cameras, but you're investing a system of cameras. And bringing in all these lenses, you can actually start filling in some of those gaps where maybe you would have brought a different camera because you have a different lens than your other camera system. And then picking the cameras that sort of suit what situation you're going in on and what you want your final products to be. And being a little more consistent in that. And I've found that smaller cameras go a lot further than you would think they would. And that maybe bringing prime lenses is a great idea, or bringing one really good zoom lens is another great idea, because then you can sort of save space where you can. And again, the idea of thinking about what you want to do. Are you going there specifically to capture family snapshots? And then maybe, you know, a 50 millimeter or a 35 millimeter is great. If you want to do a bit more street portraiture or architectural work, you're going to want a little bit of a portrait length, an 85 millimeter or a 105, 135, and maybe even a 28 or a 24 mixed into the batch. And then you got that three lens kit. You got the wide angle, the normal, and the portrait. So it's important to build a system that works well when you are traveling, and then just bring that along. And oftentimes you will have that extra space because you're going to want to bring more film than you intend to shoot, because you don't necessarily want to be buying film there because you don't know if they're the place that actually sells film. That was one thing that I encountered when I was in Europe, was I tried to do some search for camera stores that were film photography friendly. I couldn't find any information online. Ultimately, when I got there, I found a ton more, but the prices were pretty high. But I had brought more than enough film for those 3 weeks where I was there. And I ended up shooting of almost all of the film I brought with me, which is, you know, really, really nice. And I didn't actually have to go and start buying film while I was in Europe. Not that I would have wanted to. I really would have liked to support some of these smaller stores, especially in cities. But in the end, I'm very glad that I brought enough with me because it would have cut into some of the funds that I had around. Now, there is, of course, a question of what sort of cameras to bring. Now, we are discussing like traveling light here. So I'm going to say, you know, your big SLRs and your big medium format SLRs, it might be a good idea to just leave those at home. In the original episode, I talked about the Contax G2. Now, that is an incredible travel camera, although it is pricey these days to get into that system, especially when you're looking at building that three-lens kit. I went in with the 28mm and the 45mm lens, and honestly, that did almost all of what I needed to do. I didn't really want that 90mm lens when I was there, although it would have been nice, especially when I was at Vimy Ridge, to get a little bit more detail in some of the statue work at the monument, and definitely to catch a little more detail on some of the old castles that I saw while I was there. And the really nice thing about the G2 is that it's small, compact, it's got a great meter. The autofocus is a bit wonky, and I did notice that. And another problem is the batteries. They do last, they're not bad, but being a specialty battery, I honestly, unless I went into a camera store, I wouldn't have been able to find it where I was in Europe. So that's one thing against it. It also, the dials sort of move when you're taking it in and out of a camera bag. So in a few cases, I accidentally overexposed a couple of rolls. Thankfully, I noticed it and was able to correct it when I was processing the film. Most of the time, I did almost lose an entire roll of film, but thankfully for scanning, I was able to recover a lot of images. So unless you already have a Contax system, either the G1 or the G2, it might not be one that you'll want to drop a bunch of money on when you are actually starting to plan out your trips. It's always best to look at your existing systems and see what works. And one of the really great systems that make for great travel cameras are the Olympus OM system. So the OM1, the OM2, and even the OM3 and the OM4 with the battery fix on it. The reason these work really well is that they are a compact SLR system camera, and you can fit one or two bodies in a bag if you are the type of person who likes to have a camera for black and white and a camera for color. And they are, especially the OM1 and the OM2, they are relatively inexpensive these days, and they are really, really small, really, really light, and the lenses are two. And I can't recommend enough the Zuiko lenses. They are incredibly sharp. The 51.8 is deadly, deadly sharp. It is incredibly sharp. In fact, I would rate it probably sharper than the 1.4 Zuiko. And then you can even get away with the 28-3.5 and then maybe the 100 millimeter lens as well. What's that, 50? And there you have that three lens kit. And it's really compact, so you have a lot of extra room for your film and any sort of extra accessories you have around it. Along those same lines, you got the Nikon FM and the FE, plus their second iterations. They're also really small, and those Nikkor glass is just absolutely incredible. These are lightweight cameras, bulletproof metering, and the batteries are, you know, a little specialized, but relatively available through drugstores and chemists, or even like grocery stores, wherever you can get them when you're in Europe. Even convenience stores probably carry those batteries. Or you just bring a few extra in your bag. Again, they don't take up a lot of space, and neither do those Nikon lenses. A 51.8 pancake lens, 28 millimeter, and the 85 or the 105 millimeter make for a great camera kit that will cover a lot of what you're doing. I definitely wish that I had gone with an SLR when I was in Europe. I think I would have shot a lot more and a lot better images. Again, I'm not a rangefinder guy. The G2 produced some incredible images, don't get me wrong, but I think I would have felt more comfortable with an SLR at the time when I went than with my G2. But hindsight being what it is, I find that the FE2 makes for an incredible travel camera today, and certainly will be one that will come on future trips. If manual focus isn't your thing, then maybe you should take a look at some of the late model SLRs. One great one that I am really starting to get along with is the Elan series, specifically the Canon Elan 7 or 7N. Very little difference between the two. And despite being a semi-pro camera, it is actually fairly small and light, and the lenses are absolutely incredible. And you can either get a good zoom lens for this camera or go with one of the primes. Now, the lenses are a little bit bigger than what you'd get with a with the Olympus Suicos, but they're autofocus, and it just sometimes you don't want to spend all your time manually focusing, manually exposing your images, although you can with the Elan 7. It has an absolutely amazing meter, and with the two dials on it, you can easily shoot manual mode. The one downside is that the lenses are expensive still, mostly because the EF mount is still used today with modern Canon cameras. But also that's a good thing, because if you are a Canon digital shooter and have those lenses, especially the EF lenses, don't mount an EFS lens on it. Interchangeability. And that goes back to the Nikon manual focus as well. If you shoot a Nikon DSLR or a mirrorless camera, you have the ability to either natively mount your manual focus lenses or adapt them to the new Z mount. Of course, if you are a mirrorless shooter, you can buy adapters and use those as well. So yeah, my recommendations for good travel cameras in the Canon Elan 7, the Nikon FE2, the Olympus OM1, the Contax G2 is also in there. But maybe you want to go smaller. Maybe you don't want to lug around a huge camera bag and just have something that you can pocket with. And that's where point and shoots really are a great little choice of cameras. And you can go any way with this. You can use the Pentax Espio line is great. Canon makes a great point and shoot. So does Nikon. But also there's some older ones that really work well. The Olympus Trip 35, as the name implies, it's four trips. It can fit in a camera. It can fit in your pocket. And it has, again, you have that delightful Suico optics. No batteries needed, providing that the Selenium cell works. You are limited in the film speeds and you are a fixed lens, but you know what? You can honestly make it work if that is really what you want. And if you are maybe going with like, oh, you know, I don't want to, you know, take as much film, but I want to maximize my results, maybe look at half frame. I wouldn't necessarily bring the Reto Ektar H35 or H35N on an important family trip, but maybe an Olympus half-frame camera or a Ricoh half-frame camera, or, you know, maybe the new ones coming out from Ricoh under their Pentax brand would make for a great travel camera to maximize the amount of film to bring along. Now, if you're like me, you also like to shoot a little bit of medium format when you are traveling. The trouble with medium format cameras is that a lot of them are a lot larger than your average 35 millimeter, so you might have to do a bit of a trade-off. Now, if you are just using medium format film while you are traveling, there are some really good options out there. If you have a lot of space in your hands, then I can't recommend enough the Pentax 6-7 system. These are beautiful cameras in any form. Personally, I'm a fan of the 6-7-2 because it has metering capabilities. But especially if you are going for printing at the end of your trip, that 6x7 negative will give you the perfect ratio for printing 8x10, whether it is in the darkroom or inkjet or in a photo book. You get really high quality negatives and a lot of great lenses available. The 105 and the 55 make for excellent options when traveling. Plus, then you only have to bring two, and that'll do most of what you're going to want. I would avoid the zoom lens, the 90-1.8. It is big, it is janky, it is heavy, and you will not forgive yourself for the amount of damage that that lens will cause your back when you are using that camera on already a huge. If you want something a little bit slower, a little bit more traditional medium format SLR, the Mamiya M645 is my go-to travel medium format SLR. Great lens kit behind it. You've got the 80mm 2.8, the 45 or the 35mm wide angle, and then the 150mm lens if you must, but you don't really need that into your system. The RB67, I honestly would not travel with that camera unless you are traveling by car so that you have a lot of extra for the size of that, and especially the tripod, you will probably. Now, if you want other good Mamiya systems would be either the Mamiya 7 or the Mamiya 6. They rate semi-automatic rangefinder cameras that are small, compact, with incredible optics behind it. Plus, again, the Mamiya 6 shoots a 6x6, Mamiya 7 6x7. So if you want something a little more compact, then definitely that. The Fuji medium format rangefinder is also a great option for the prices. I would go with either the 6x7, 6x9, you know, that could actually work really well. But the 6x7 gives a much more reasonable amount. You get 10 shots per roll, so you don't have to carry as much film as if you were shooting a 6x9. Now, if space is an issue and you do have a 35mm camera, maybe take a look at folders. Zeiss Icon, they're absolutely incredible. Small, the Iconta or the Super Iconta series is really nice, especially it will just fold up flat, slide into the bag, take up almost no room, and you can carry around a bunch of medium format film without any extra problem. Again, try to be consistent in your film choices, but yeah, honestly, the downside with folders is that sometimes they're guest focus or zone focus. Some of them have rangefinders, but most of them you will also need to bring an external meter. But you can get a Revenny Labs or a similar hot shoe meter, and that will do most of what you need. But what about film? Well, here's where things get interesting, because as someone who shoots both digital and film, I like to stick to black and white film when I'm going traveling, mainly because it creates a nice classic look, and I like having a little bit of control over my final images and what I'm doing. But the one thing I am going to tell you is that consistency is your best friend. Especially if you are doing home processing, you don't want to be spending a lot of time and a lot of days developing your film and bringing out a ton of different chemistry. Shoot similar film stocks across your entire trip and then pick a single way to develop them. And keep it as easy as possible. Fomapan is a great travel film, Fomapan 100. Especially if you're on a budget, or Kentmere 100 or 400 makes for great travel films as well. And they are cost effective, so you can actually bring more film along and not have to worry about blowing almost all your budget on the expensive Kodak stuff. Ilford HP5 makes for a great travel film, incredibly versatile. Same with Delta 400, FP4, and Yeah, bring two or three along, because again, you don't know how the weather is going to change over the course of your time there. And then kind of pick one developer that will get the best results out of certain blocks of film. I know it sounds really weird, and I know I love to shoot a variety and bring a variety of films with, but in the end, it saves you a lot of time when you are processing your own film, scanning your own film. You can sort of set your baseline and just run with it, and you will be good to go, and your family will thank you later, because you aren't going to be spending a ton of time after the family trip to take care of the film developing and scanning. It just makes life so much easier, and you're going to thank yourself too. One of the biggest problems these days is, of course, traveling with film. It's a lot different from when I went to Europe in 2015, and that has to do with the introduction of CT scanners at certain airports. Now, CT scanners can cause damage to film. How much damage, I honestly don't know, because I've never had to go through an airport with CT scanners installed. But thankfully, these days, there's a lot more optics and visibility of film in the wider market, and a lot of airport security guards, if you have your film properly prepared, are willing to conduct a hand search for your film to make sure that, you know, you're not accidentally sneaking cocaine in your 35 millimeter film canisters. So my best bit of advice is to keep all your film out in your carry-on bag and have it in a clear Ziploc container, and if at all possible, have the film out of the canisters. Include the canisters in the bag as well. They'll probably want to check those too, or just send the canisters through the X-ray scanner or CT scanner, but make sure that you get your film hand checked and be ready to read the room. If things are looking really, really busy, be polite, be respectful of the security guards and the border agents. They are just doing their job, and be friendly towards them. And there's a good chance that if you're friendly and are very understanding, they're going to be understanding as well. Never ever travel with your cameras loaded and partial roll shot through them, because they're going to send those through the CT scanner and there is absolutely nothing you can do about it, because they are going to want to see what is inside those camera bodies to make sure that they are in fact cameras. I mean, you know, and I know that we travel with cameras, but those security guards don't necessarily know us. Unfortunately, it also has to do with who you are, what you look like. So just present yourself professionally, present yourself as friendly, and be respectful towards them. And good chance they're going to accept what you ask for. And, you know, maybe it means going a little bit earlier to the airport to keep those security lines down. They'll be less rushed. It'll be a much cooler situation. And you never know, you might be able to strike up a conversation with a fellow photographer. Now, one thing that I am very good at when it comes to my photography is keeping a record of things. And that's one thing that I really enjoyed about my time in Europe, is that I brought a notebook with me. So not only could I record how I shot my film, where I shot it, how I exposed it, the camera, the lens combination, it also meant that I could record a travel journal. And keeping a notebook and a pen in your camera bag is a great way to remember what you shot where. Not just the technical aspects of it, because that's not necessarily important to everyone. It is to me. But also what you were feeling when you were out there shooting, because that might come to help you later on, especially if you're going away for a long period of time. Being able to write down those memories, what you were feeling, where you were, why you shot these images, what makes them important to you, is useful, because you can't necessarily always remember everything. And sometimes it might not always be as you remembered it when you try to think about it later. It's incredibly useful, and it will help you make better memories of the trip if you're able to sort of download your thoughts and feelings and remember how you shot the film, which will come back to help you when you are processing them later. And it comes down to that whole consistent thing. Try to shoot as much as you can at the same way, so you'll save time later with process. And even if necessary, come up with a system of how to log your rolls of film. Bring a Sharpie marker and write codes or serial numbers on the film canisters or the cassettes themselves or the rolls of 120, because you're going to not necessarily remember everything. Have some film holders with you. The Japan Camera Hunter ones are fantastic. You can fit five rolls of either 120 or 35 millimeter, and it just makes a nice compact way. And don't always carry all your film with you. Leave some in a secure place, especially if you're staying in a hotel. Lock it in a safe so that you don't necessarily need to waste or potentially lose rolls of film while you're out in the field. Now, the last bit of advice comes with what sort of camera bag to take along. And again, you have to really gauge what camera bag you take along by how you're traveling and where you're traveling to. If you are trying to travel light, don't bring a big camera bag. I can't speak highly enough of the Think Tank Retrospective line, the V2. It makes for a great travel bag, especially if you're only bringing a couple of cameras along. I can fit a couple of SLRs, including my D750 with or without the grip, but if I'm traveling and need enough space for a second camera and a couple of lenses, I'll take that battery grip off. That brings me up to two batteries that I can just swap in and out, plus an extra lens and a second camera body and a few rolls of film in there at the same time. Camera backpacks are a great thing if you need to bring a couple extra lenses, couple extra bodies, but have a messenger bag with you as well so that if you do have the ability to swap stuff in and out, you're not lugging a huge backpack on your back. It gives you an extra space on your back for, say, a carry-on backpack as well, because sometimes a small enough camera bag can count as a personal item while traveling by plane. I found that when I was in Europe. So it just comes down to finding the right camera bag for you and how much gear you want to carry around with you. But again, try to keep it as light as possible because you don't know what sort of situations you're going to be in if you need to move quickly. And I find that you access your gear a lot faster when you have a messenger bag more so than a backpack. Now, one thing that you can do, especially after you're done, is if you've taken notes, especially if you've journaled during your travels, I recommend making a photo book or a photo album with some nice written captions for your images and the stories that you gathered on your travels, where you went, how you were feeling, because we don't make enough photo albums these days. And if you remember from our last episode talking with Tanya and Jess and Chris, that having those photo albums means that those memories will be captured forever and you'll be able to go back and look at the images you shot. You can remember the stories, you can have a laugh, you can have a cry, and just really relive that trip once again. I still need to make a proper photo book from my trip to Europe. We're coming up on a decade since I did that. And thankfully, I have the written journal still. It's packed away somewhere. I'll need to dig it out. But it means that I still have those memories. And because I wrote them down, I still remember them. And it's just really important because once you have those tangible things, they're always readily available for you to look at. You don't have to go scrambling to look back at any sort of hard drives or backup drives or Flickr to try to find those images. Again, you can just pull out a book, flip through it at your own leisure. It's just a really nice way to wrap up a trip and make sure that those memories last forever. So just to wrap this up, a couple pieces of advice. Number one, bring a digital camera, especially if it is a family vacation. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be a professional DSLR. There's lots of amazing compact digital options, both in the mirrorless and the point-and-shoot realm. Sony makes some great cameras. Nikon makes some great cameras. Fuji makes some great cameras. Canon makes cameras. You can even bring a Digicam from the early 2000s and into the 2010s because they are compact and still produce great images. Panasonic is another really good one. The Lumix LX series makes great compact travel point and shoot. The second thing is be aware of your surroundings at all times. Not every city is safe. There's a lot of people who may not appreciate you taking photos of either them or the buildings or their shops. So always be willing to defer to what the locals say. And if you meet any sort of resistance, or if someone is sort of not wanting you to take a picture without saying it, watch body image, body language, be prepared to just put that camera away and give them a smile and apologize as much as possible. And also in that same line, spatial awareness and situational awareness. I was nearly mugged when I was in Europe, and thankfully I was able to avoid that by talking to the local police, and that was taken care of really swiftly. But you don't want to get in a situation where you're going to lose either your camera bag, your money, or heaven forbid, your passport, and not be able to get out and get home in a reasonable amount of time. Okay, so that about wraps it up for this episode. I know it's a little bit shorter than what we would normally do, but that's what happens when you have a solo episode. Until next time, friends, my name's Alex Loux. Shoot what you love, with what you love, on what you love. Don't give in to that.